Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
So I therefore decided I could do two things. Boo-hoo, boo-hoo, poor me. Or I could try and make a difference for the women who came after me. So I decided to be an ambassador and fundraiser. And I'm an international ambassador for Action Medical Research to this day. And I started working with them back in 1973.
Cue music. Places, everybody, places. We're starting in 3, 2.
Welcome to the Autoimmune Hour, where we look at the rise of autoimmune disorders. I've brought together top experts that range from doctors, specialists, nutritionists, researchers, and even those recovering from autoimmune to bring you the latest, most up-to-date information about autoimmunity and how to live your life uninterrupted.
Thank you for joining us here on the Autoimmune Hour with Sharon Saylor. Always seek sound legal, medical, and or professional advice regarding any problems, conditions, and any of the recommendations you see, hear, or read here on the Autoimmune Hour, Understanding Autoimmune and Life Interrupted Radio. Join the Autoimmune Hours Courage Club. Sign up now at understandingautoimmune.com. Now, back to your host, Sharon Saylor.
Welcome, everyone, to the Autoimmune Hour. I'm Sharon Saylor from SharonSaylor.com. And as always, it's my honor and pleasure to be with you here on another brand new episode. And I'm so excited. I have a wonderful friend named Susie Briscoe on, and she is just a prolific author. And she writes a lot about legacy. And her latest book, let me get the title right. She's the author of the international bestseller, Color Your Legacy, but her newest book is called Ascension to Legacy. And so I'm so excited because we're going to be talking about legacy. And when I reached out to Susie, she's sort of like, what? Autoimmune Hour? Legacy? And I had to say, absolutely. Because how many of us, once we get that diagnosis, well, first start to make meaning of it, like, okay, what's this about? But I've noticed a fair number of our community are patient advocates and or caregiver advocates. Now, that to me is about creating legacy. How are we going to change the situation for others? You know, what can we impart about our experience that will be helpful for others? So we're going to talk about that and other meanings of how Susie defines legacy. So welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Sharon. And I've been looking forward to this. I'm just so excited to be with you.
Oh,
thank
my
you for trusting me with your audience.
Oh, of course. Of course. Let me give your bio here. Susie has identified leading legacy work as a major part of her passion. And it's all about filling that gap for people who still have an empty feeling inside themselves for whatever reason and finding a way to give back to the world, while recognizing the importance of not wasting time as the clock continues to tick. And I think once you get some sort of diagnosis in your life, maybe the clock, at least for me, the clock ticked a little louder. You have just a long and varied history, headhunted by Nightingale Corporation, on, and worked with Brian Tracy and other notables. So, but I want to make sure that we have time to talk about it. So first, Susie, what prompted you to explore the topic of legacy?
I didn't expect to. It suddenly came up and hit me on the nose.
Oh.
You know how these things, you automatically presume that a legacy is for somebody who's famous.
Yeah.
Like a president or a billionaire, millionaire, whatever. And they have an airport named after them, or they have a road named after a museum, a foundation, all of the above. But you never, ever expect it to be associated with the normal person. I'd like a definition of normal, but you know.
Yeah, that stopped me from a normal person. Okay.
Yeah,
just as regular people out here.
So I suddenly realized that I was actually walking my own legacy every day of my life because of the way I'd started out helping a charity because of a personal condition. I kept on having miscarriages. So I therefore decided I could do two things, legs in the air, boo-hoo, boo-hoo, poor me, or I could try and make a difference for the women who came after me. So I decided to be an ambassador and fundraiser for them. And I'm international ambassador for Action Medical Research to this day. And I started working with them back in 1973. So that's a good long time. And it crept up on me that the different things that I was doing was actually creating a little legacy of my own. And that's when it hit me. It doesn't have to be world changing. It can be, but it doesn't have to be. It can be just you interacting with your family.
Well, you're changing someone's world in your family.
Absolutely. So from that point of view, I think everybody leaves a legacy. My glasses keep falling down my nose.
Well, you know, it's interesting because when we were talking about legacy beyond patient advocacy, a few weeks ago, you and I were chatting, and I wanted to bring up the topic of, it doesn't have to be about patient advocacy, because I'm thinking, in my childhood, I had an aunt, and she taught me so many things. She was teaching me things like how to knit, how to cook, yeah, how to sew, how to quilt. I could go on and on the list of sort of craft type items she was teaching me.
A legacy to you.
But so much more of that was about creativity, seeing patterns, observation, persistence, continue, get the job complete.
And absolutely.
And now when I'm with my own grandkids, I try to model that aunt.
Great.
So that's her legacy, and I hope it's mine by continuing the desire for that same legacy.
I can see that. You're creating it as you're walking through your own life. Most of us do, and we don't think about it. It's not something that comes to mind. I had one girlfriend. I raised it on Facebook. I've known this particular girlfriend for, I should think, nearly 50 years. And when she saw it on Facebook, she came back to me and said, well, I think it's rather presumptuous to think that we're all going to be leaving legacies. Then when I explained my version of how a legacy is lived and how you create it and what the effect has, so that when you're passed, people still remember you fondly, just as you were talking about your aunt just then. And everybody is doing, that's what each of us are doing in one way or another.
Let's hope it's fondly. So I'll keep it positive here because I can think of a few that, yeah, I'm not so sure. But anyway, so how do you
do that?
What are some of the first steps if you're starting to think about legacy that you can begin to purposefully create legacy?
I think for me, I did it naturally. And as a result of that, it meant a lot to me. I think if you try and create a legacy, it's going to be more difficult than if you are creating one naturally. And giving back and contribution are very high ideals for me, values for me. And it's when you start thinking along those lines and not so much of yourself, taking yourself out of the equation, that's when you start to really give and being thoughtful and mindful of how you interact with other people. And I think that's a really nice beginning to it.
Yeah, absolutely. Because we can all see people who are doing things and you begin to question their motivation.
Yeah.
Is this for celebrity or for some other purpose?
Absolutely. And that shrieks at you. Generally, people can smell when it's not real, that there's a completely different way people are communicating what they're thinking. And when it's coming from the heart, it's so authentic. People know that it's authentic and it's genuine and it's you being you and definitely wanting to make a difference in the lives of your family, your village, your town, your country, whatever.
And as we begin to explore some of the things that we enjoy doing or our skill sets that we could enjoy teaching or passing on or some things like that, do you have ways that you encourage people to explore? Like, what is my passion, or what am I wanting to do here?
Generally speaking, I take clients through a values elicitation so that they really get to know themselves in a way that is more intimate than they would have known before. And as a result of going into the values, I'm just asking questions. It's simple questions. What do you like to do? How do you like to spend your time? What makes you want to do that? Why do you want to spend your time with them? What is the benefit? What falls out of it? What difference does that make? All these questions. So you go deeper and deeper and deeper until the client is saying, enough already, they've run out of reasons, you know. But that's when you know you've really got down to the nuts and bolts of it, the truth of what is behind. And that's when the passion comes out. And if people don't have a personal hook involving them in something, it won't last. It simply won't last. I've seen people decide that they want to be, you know, very generous and give to a charity. Well, unless you've got a hook for wanting to be involved with that charity, that isn't going to sustain you through the years. It simply won't happen. But when you've genuinely got an interest in something, then that makes all the difference, being mindful. So I take them through a values elicitation, and then we mark out what order their values are, what's most important to them in their values. And usually out of all of that exercise comes something that they feel that they want to make a difference in their lives with, because they've never thought about it before.
I don't think my aunt ever thought about what an amazing legacy in my mind, and I think other family members' mind, she was creating when she was teaching me what I'll call, you know, basic life skills.
Absolutely. I'm sure she didn't. I've got a kitten on the floor here who has just found my toe. Oh. Sorry about that. Wriggling and jiggling. Sorry. Continue. I'm so sorry, Sharon.
Well, you know, in your latest book, it's filled with wonderful stories and vignettes of the people you've worked with and that you've interviewed. So can you share with us a couple of your favorites?
Yes. I think one of my favorites has got to be Honeybee. She and her husband, when they retired, they wanted to make a difference to their community. They recognized that there were homeless people there and people who were going hungry. So they decided that they would open the downstairs of their home, if I understand it correctly, as a restaurant. But the difference with this particular restaurant was that there was no menu and there was no price. So, and I envisage in my head, you know, like I would imagine in America, you have voting booths pretty much the same as you do here. You go in to vote and nobody sees what you're writing, where you're putting your cross.
Right, right.
Well, I envisage that in the corner of their restaurant. And people go in there, and if they can afford to leave $10, that's exactly what they do, or more maybe. If they can't, if they can only afford a dime, that's what they do. And if they can't afford anything, they just write a thank you note. And there's no questions asked. Nobody is any the wiser of who's done what. And her cooking is phenomenal, apparently. And so people who aren't in that same category that they originally thought they were cooking for are going to enjoy the food. And of course, as a result of that, they're eating alongside the have-nots. So it's really opened the horizons on both sides of the world for, you know, the haves and the have-nots. I think it's a wonderful story. And the fact that they're actually doing it every day is marvelous. She grows everything in the garden, and what she can't grow she gets from market. But it's the haves that are contributing to the private basket where you can put your money or whatever. I think that's just wonderful.
Absolutely.
That's just one of them.
That to me is not only creating a legacy but living it. Absolutely walking the walk and the talk of like something has to change. How can we be a catalyst for that change?
There was another woman, an English woman, who Anne, her name is, and her daughter was murdered.
Oh.
And it was pretty horrendous. And they got the right man, but he didn't get convicted. There wasn't enough evidence. So he skipped out on being sentenced. And he was in prison for something else. And he was talking randomly to his cellmate and was boasting about how he'd got away with murder. The fact that he'd already been tried meant that historically they couldn't retry him. Double jeopardy. But this lady absolutely got her back into it, and she changed the law of the land in order for people who have been tried once and got off, if there's the evidence to sustain that they are guilty, then they can be tried again. And that has changed the course of history in law. And I think that is, again, a wonderful thing, a wonderful legacy she's left the world, well, certainly England, and I'm sure the rest of the world would also agree with the sentiment behind it.
It's unfortunate that in some instances it's a tragedy that spurs people forward. I noticed that in autoimmune, and perhaps tragedy might not be the right word, but a lot of people choose to be patient advocates. There are several autoimmune conditions that would be qualified under rare conditions. And so obviously ignored by the larger societal and medical associations about what's really happening. And
Well, AIDS was typical of that to start with.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And that came of age very rapidly because famous people in, I would think, probably the rock and roll world, popular music world, were suffering. And they had the friends and the finance to actually make a difference and get the research done. Elton John is amazing for the work that the money he's raised to make awareness of the problems of AIDS and how to the research to make it easier to live with. And you can live with it now.
Absolutely. And then I think of all of the people and numerous countries who are building their own legacies around that particular, around AIDS survival and AIDS living with it, as well as other things. I think of a few guests that we've had on the show with a series of different autoimmune conditions and how they have done everything from past legislation to creating walk-in clinics where people can and receive help. And I just find that so fascinating and what drives people forward.
It's awe-inspiring.
Yeah,
it's really awe-inspiring.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, I'd like to know a little bit more, though, about, you know, it can be scary to put yourself out there. As you began to put yourself out there for your chosen, I know besides the miscarriage charity, you're also on several other charities and trusts and boards as well. What are some recommendations you have for people about, I've identified what it is that I'm willing to sort of stake my claim on or set my, you know, put that stake in the ground for.
Yeah.
And yet maybe they're like, I don't know. What are some ways that people can become to get involved and really move forward?
Well, first of all, they need to identify what it is that they're really interested in. And we've already spoken about the hook that would hold them to be true to it. Then after that, it's a question of how much they want to move the mountain. If you want to create a research chair, for example, think of the medical profession in this instance, it's relatively easy to do fundraisers and raise money. And if you have a good support around you and you can reach out to other people. I've never been afraid to write letters to people I don't even know. I mean, when I've got my charity cape on, I'm fearless, totally fearless. And I will go and do and say anything in order. I won't lie. That's why I won't do that. But, you know, I will absolutely go for it to get the support that I need in order to make something happen. But that is only because I'm hooked. There's a reason for me being involved in it. I think what I like to do with clients, apart from doing the values elicitation, is I like to get them to reassess their life in a completely different way. So it's not about how much money you've got in the bank. That's an irrelevance. I'm not particularly wealthy, but I make a difference and I enjoy making a difference by contributing and giving to whoever I can, whenever I can, and for whatever reason. As long as my heart is in it, I can do it very happily. But then I also like to take them through what assets they have. And again, we're not looking at the house and the car and the Christian Louboutins, for want of a better, you know, it's not about the material things. It's about what learning they've had in their life. What, and I don't mean PhD level or anything like that. I just mean things that they possibly don't even know that they've understood, to get them to stop and take an inventory, if you will, of their life and recognize that if they read so many books on a particular subject, that is contributing to their knowledge. And that is also therefore contributing to how they speak of it and how they reflect it into their own community. So is that making any sense for you? Oh, I hope it does.
Absolutely. I think a lot of times people have a couple of notions like, well, if I can do it, anybody can do it. And, oh, that little thing I went through, recovery from autoimmune, who is interested in that? And not understanding, when I think about just the autoimmune now and the passion that I did to start the show, and here we are, wow, going into our eighth year, I think, 350 plus episodes.
It's wonderful. What you've achieved.
And
bravo.
Thank you. Didn't start out with legacy in mind, just started in information gathering in mind. Okay, I personally want to know more. And I found out other people wanted to know similar things that I wanted to know. And so
exactly.
It grew very organically. And I think that's what I'm hearing you say about most legacies. Yes. Grow organically. It's not about endowing a building or a chairmanship. It's about...
No, it's not about throwing money at something. Sometimes you do that, but it's not. That's not the motivation behind it.
Well, I'm thinking of one person that I know that actually had a horrific medical outcome based on a lot of bad choices by their medical professionals, and was so unable to change their specific situation, but encouraged through legislation and other things similar to your story, and now has legislation in place about what happens when horrific things happen that were beyond your control. They were in someone else's control. And what a legacy. It's interesting to me that when I talked to him, it's certainly never in his mind was like, certainly not my choice to have to do that, to make this my legacy. That was...
Exactly.
I wouldn't have signed up for it.
Precisely right. But that is the real... That is what... I mean, that's even more beautiful in my head, because it's what's developed out of a loving approach to how you live your life and a mindful approach to what difference you want to make in the world. I think everybody wants to make a difference and be the best that they can be. And I mean, practically every client that I've had has come up with, I want to be my best self. Mm. But first of all, they've got to know themselves to find out what their best self is. And that's the warts and all thing. You know, you've got to look at the shadow as well as the bright.
Right. Well, and then I'm thinking also at a certain point with my choice for the autoimmune hour, I have learned so much about myself. It's incredible. Not just my health, not just the physical side, but the spiritual, mental, emotional side as well, which is incredible. But a lot of the driver beginning was trying to make meaning of the whole thing in my own mind.
Absolutely. Yes. And it is about finding your purpose, your passion. A lot of coaches 15 years or so back were talking about your purpose and your passion and trying to, I think there was another P as well. They were making an alliteration of it so that they could get some jazzy programs together. But, you know, it's more than just having a few words strung together. It's making the difference that's the important thing.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And how people make meaning of it. And so you have dived into a number of your own types of things. I just want to ask you personally, when you think about your legacy, how would you like that to be?
Well, you'd think I would have thought of it, wouldn't you? At a personal level, I would like to believe that I've made a difference to my family, that I have helped my daughter and my grandson and made a difference in their lives by living by example. And we spoke about that earlier, really. Your aunt was doing that for you, mm-hmm. living by example. And I think that, well, I always go to a negative here. Let's go to a negative for a change and think of the Dickens character, Fagin. And he had the boys that he taught to pick pockets in the book Oliver Twist. Well, we would decry that as, you know, we don't want, you know, that's not the right sort of attitude and you can't teach boys to steal and that sort of thing. But he, given the era that it was written in, he was actually providing those street boys with a way of earning a living and therefore able to keep body and soul together. And so even though it can be coming from a not particularly nice place, it still can have a good outcome, even if it's not the most morally correct outcome, if you follow.
Oh, that's fascinating. I hadn't looked at it from that perspective. That brings up this idea of context and perspective as well.
Absolutely.
On understanding how people make choices that they make. And
yeah,
one of the choices I need to make right now, unfortunately, is I need to take a quick commercial break. And when we come back, we'll talk some more with Susie Briscoe, who's the author of Color Your Legacy and Ascension to Legacy, How to Live Your Legacy in Your Lifetime. We'll be right back.
Life Interrupted Radio will return after these messages from our sponsors. It's great sponsors like these that keep this show coming to you every week. Be sure and stop by lifeinterruptedradio.com to learn more.
Hi, this is Sharon, and of course you know me from here on the Autoimmune Hour. Maybe you don't know I'm also an author. My latest book is for kids. It's Pinky Chenille and the Rainbow Hunters, a winner of a 5-star reader's favorite review. It's perfect for your early reader and a great bedtime story for your young adventurers. Check it out over at pinkychenille.com. That's PinkyChenille.com. See you there.
Research shows we apologize up to 10 times a day, and most of the time, we say sorry as a response to someone else's mistake. What if we thanked people instead of all that unnecessary apologizing? So instead of saying, sorry, I'm rambling, you say, thank you for listening. Join us at projectforgive.com, a free non-religious resource on global forgiveness.
Do you want to be a better leader, have better relationships, become more self-aware, be a better communicator? Hi, I'm Sharon Saylor, best-selling author, professional speaker, and executive coach, and my life passion is empowering professionals to be the best that they can be. After years of working with professionals, I've discovered the 7 things nobody is telling you that can cost you your clients, sales, and even your career. And I want to give it to you free. You've heard my show, you know my passion, and maybe we'll be working together sooner rather than later. So go grab this ebook now to find out the 7 things that's costing you big time over at SharonSaylor.com/radio gift.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Autoimmune Hour. I'm Sharon Saylor from SharonSaylor.com. And tonight we're here with Susie Briscoe, and she is the author of Color Your Legacy. And her latest book is called Ascension to Legacy, How to Live Your Legacy in Your Lifetime. And we've been talking about the ideas of passion and purpose, and sometimes things that happen to you in your life that create your legacy. It's all about finding it and then implementing it and taking action. And I think sometimes people can give a lot of lip service, Susie, to it, but get stuck in the taking action and like, who am I, or what's the next steps?
Who are you not to? That wonderful Marianne Williamson quote, who are you not to? You are a child of God, and et cetera, et cetera. You know the quote I mean?
I'm not familiar with that one. I'm sorry. That was.
Oh, wow.
But I do like the concept. Well, why not you?
Exactly. I wish I could quote it all. I mean, it's quite a sizable chunk, and I have it in my first book. I refer to it. I think she's an amazing lady.
Yeah.
But anyway, so you started asking me about what I would like to be remembered for, my legacy.
Mm-hmm.
And I suddenly realized that I divided my interests, shall we say, my important things in life that I really cared about. I got 5 pillars of them. And the first one is your health, because I think without your health, you've got absolutely nothing. It doesn't matter, you could have a million and trillion in the bank, and if you haven't got your health, money can't buy the cure for it. You need health.
You know, it's funny, Susie, that we bring that one up first, because oftentimes when we're healthy, we give lip service to it as a truism. Yeah, like, yes, yes, yes. But it's not until your health, are up against a health
absolutely
challenge, that it becomes extremely clear that is the key one.
Absolutely. And you and I have both, we've had that discussion before, and we've both come to our conclusions that health is probably the number one in my life. And I think it is in yours as well.
Absolutely. Like I said, when things were rosier and different, I gave lip service to it and thought I was living a healthy life because I ate salad, did things like that.
Yay.
And they were healthy. They weren't unhealthy. However, just understanding that, yes, taking your health seriously while you still have it is the critical key here.
So then I come to the next 2 pillars, and I have a problem in my own head, chicken and eggs kind of thing. Education, I think, is the one thing that you can give to a child after you've given it life. You give it life, you give it, hopefully you give it health. And then you give it an education, and the education enables it to go out into the world and earn a living. And that enables them to have a home. So having a home is crucial to, it's like Maslow's hierarchy of human needs, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Your safety and your security and all of that sort of thing. Health and well, I'm putting education in there, and home. So those are 3 are my first 3 pillars. And then I come on to, I think, animals next, because we as human beings have made such terrible mistakes in how we've lived the life to get to the planet where it is now, touching on environment already, but just I worry about animals going extinct, and I do my best to ensure that I'm contributing in a small, very small way in this particular area to helping animals. And I've been on the board of Battersea Dogs and Cats Home, which is one of the, well, I think it is the oldest charity animal charity for dogs and cats. We had a few rabbits and goats, I don't know what in, but that's been going for 160, just over 160 years now.
Wow.
And yes, exactly. Queen Victoria was its first patron, royal patron. So, and it, that's followed through all the way through to the Queen today. So I'm in good company there. And I really think it's so important that we look after animals as we would like to be looked after ourselves, so that we have a bit more of a mindful approach to it. And of course, that also includes the animals that aren't domestic, that are in danger of being extinct, poor old elephants. And I don't know, we don't know actually how many animals have been extinct in our own lifetime, because we didn't know they were there to start with. So we don't know what we're losing in the world, but to try and save the planet as much as we can. And that brings me on to the last pillar, which is the environment and climate change and just being, again, living in a more mindful way. So those are my five pillars. Mm. And that's what I try and live by. And more so in some areas than in another. The first three, I'm much more able to make a small difference in. But the last two are very important for the ongoing future of mankind. So that's what I try, how I try and live my own life with those things in mind.
That's so interesting. And I'm thinking about when we talk about pillars, how to balance them and
yes,
the places where you want to put more emphasis on. Because I'm thinking we had Dr. Carly Hudson on a couple of episodes ago, and she was talking about these, how she puts three pillars of health, and that was the mental, spiritual, and the physical. And how important yes, is that, in similar to your pillars, how balance and how we can make a difference, which how we can choose to make a conscious difference, I should say, is really critically important in deciding what is consciously important to us and what will make the most significant difference right now. Because oftentimes, if we're thinking, oh my goodness, that's too big a problem, we can get frozen in action. So do you help people sort of what I say, sort of chunk down when they say, oh, global this or global that, and all of a sudden it's like too big and they become frozen and no action is taken?
Yes, exactly. Rabbit in headlights.
Yes,
I do. Because, and that's what I was referring to right at the top of our conversation, when I was asking them questions about their values. And it's keep it, why is that important to you? What does that mean to you? Why? And it's the why behind the why that's behind that why. You know, you just keep on digging. Mm-hmm. And as I said, I've had clients begging me for enough already. I can't go any deeper. We've had enough. And it's quite an exhausting experience. It can take, depending on the client and how open they are to working and being involved in that process, it can take at least two or three weeks to actually go through a values elicitation with me.
Well, I can see where also I would want to experience some things like, well, okay, maybe we've said, oh, Sharon, this is an interest of yours. This is something you're very passionate about. I think I would be the one who went, okay, well, maybe why? I will go cook meals there, or I would try it out before I all of a sudden get on the board.
Exactly right.
See if I have done my processing in my own head correctly. Like, is this the place that I want to spend my time? So let's dip our toe into it by helping through this charity event or something like that, instead of jumping in full into the deep end without.
Absolutely. And my first three, I was on the board of all of the, of each of those sort of organizations. Not on the board of medical, that I wasn't on the board of that, but I was an international ambassador for Action Medical Research. And then I was on the board of the Battersea Dogs and Cats Home, and on the board of Church Housing Trust. And I'm now a patron of the homeless charity. And when I retired from Battersea, they created a scholarship in my name, the Susie Briscoe Scholarship, which is given in perpetuity annually. And it is about taking, I think after 160 years, we've more or less sorted out where what we're doing, you know. And so we want to share that knowledge around the globe. And particularly, I mean, when I was in Kenya, I went to the Kenyan Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals out there. Obviously, it would be out there, wouldn't it? And I could see the different ways that we were able to work with our dogs and cats, to what they didn't have the facilities. How could they? They couldn't have the same degree of attention and detail that we were using. But it's showing and demonstrating that this is the five-star version of doing it. And how can we help you attain that as your goal, if that is what you want? And it struck me, I mean, just walking around in that particular sanctuary, there was a whole load. I mean, I don't know what the collective of puppies would be, but they were all sorts of shapes and sizes puppies. And they were out in the midday sun in Kenya. Nice. And let's face it, that sun is pretty strong. And I was looking at them. And even if they moved it, it was like in a paddling pool kind of an arrangement, or a sand pit kind of thing. And even if they moved it, the sun was moving anyway, and they didn't have very much shade that they could have moved it to. So inevitably, some of those puppies would be killed just from heat stroke, just because of the situation they were in. They were all in together. And also, they had aloe vera growing just as a weed out there. And there was a donkey who'd been beaten to within an inch of its life, I would say. It was getting healing. It was certainly better than it was, but it had a sore on its back, I should think, at least 4 or 5 inches wide, deep, and awful. And there were flies laying their eggs in it. And I said, if you just get saline fluid and run that through the wound to clean it, make it as sterile as you can, and then you get the leaf of the aloe plant and you strip the jelly, the juice out of it, and put that into the wound, that will be the most amazing healing generation for that particular wound. Aloe is an amazing plant. And the fact that it's growing there free as a weed, it's easy to pick up and use. But people don't know that necessarily unless somebody's told them. And I only knew because I studied it.
Simple solutions sometimes. Well, I'm always amazed that sometimes the obvious isn't obvious until somebody who knows it comments on it.
Absolutely. In India, I went to see one of the sanctuaries out there. It was in Chennai, the Chennai district, which is in Tamil Nadu down in the south. And they would collect the pie dogs from the streets, you know, the rough and tumble dogs that didn't live and weren't earned by anybody. And they would collect them and take them to their center and neuter them. And then they'd clip the ear so that they knew if they saw that dog again, they knew that she'd been neutered. Mm-hmm. And then the best part of it was they had to take it back to the absolute street corner where they had collected it from, because that was where its tribe was. It was part of the family of that street culture. And the other dogs would look after, I mean, they were part of the pack. Wow. So they would all feed together and look after each other together. And some people actually looked after the pie dogs on the street. But if you moved them to a different corner, then they would be set upon by the dogs that lived there. I mean, amazing. I didn't know that until I went out there and saw for myself.
I don't think I would have thought of that. So it's the lived experience is such a good teacher.
Yeah, absolutely. May I share with you what I'm doing now?
Absolutely.
Because I've retired. Well, I haven't retired. I never will retire from action because that was my first love. But I'm now on the board, well, I'm chair of the board of a new charity, which is bringing light to the darkened places around the world. So where there isn't electricity and you've got kerosene lights, for example, they're not terribly safe and neither are candles. So we are bringing solar power lanterns to the communities, and we're, our aim is working, we've already made a tiny little start, but we're working in Southeastern Asia, Sub-Sahara Africa, and across South America. So just making a tiny little difference here and there by using solar powered energy and harnessing what's naturally out there. It's amazing. So I'm very, very proud to be doing that. And the last, one of my newest ones is the country Myanmar. Now, the reason I'm involved with this is because my late husband absolutely adored rugby. And I came across the chairman of this somehow. I can't even remember how we met, really. Claddy is an amazing South African. And he's living in England now, except that he's head of a sports department for various international schools. And he has been in Kenya. He has been in Myanmar. And he's currently in Qatar. So it's a varied and interesting career path he has.
Yes.
But it's all leadership is based on rugby. And teaching the children the rugby skills to enhance their own self-esteem and leadership potential. And I'm doing that because it's something that my late husband would have been interested in. So in a sense, that's not my own dream, but I'm living it for my husband. So I'm happy to do that. And I'm also on the board advisory panel of WinTrade Global, which is a networking membership site. It's based in England, but we have members throughout the entire world. And it's really wonderful. They've invited me onto the advisory panel. It's because of my charity work. They want some input into making a difference with the work that they're doing, how they can channel what they're doing into making a difference in the world in their own way. And it's going to be based more on women and children.
What I love about that is what I'll say, the multi-layered part of the legacy, not only your own personal passion and work in the charities you've chosen and the different areas you've chosen, but also to honor someone else, in this case, your late husband, is yeah. another form of legacy, not only yours, his, and then imparting what you've learned by creating these other avenues of legacy, imparting to someone else on creating a whole new line of legacy by teaching what it is you've learned during this time.
It's fun. If it isn't fun, then you're not doing it. you know what I mean? If it isn't fun, stop doing it, because it has to be fun. Otherwise, why would you do it?
Right.
And making a difference can be absolutely amazing fun.
Oh, my goodness. That's fantastic. Susie, we're just down to the last couple of minutes. Any parting thoughts? And then let us know where we can get your books.
Okay. Well, the books are available on Amazon. That's an easy thing to deal with. And the first one is Colour Your Legacy. That went international number one on Amazon. And I was so humbled by that. Actually, I can tell you a little story about that. But and the second one is also number one in 5 countries on Amazon. It went number one in Australia, India, Canada, America, and the UK.
Awesome.
And it's just mind-blowing. But it's because my publisher is so good. Vicky Winterton is my publisher, and she's amazing.
Yes.
Big shout out to Vicky.
Yes, I know Vicky too. She's awesome. She's just a powerhouse.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Oh, absolutely.
Congratulations on the bestseller. That's awesome. And they're fabulous books. And
may I share with you, though, when I first thought that I wanted to write something, I was terrified, put the head over the parapet, the tall poppy syndrome kind of thing. Mm-hmm. You don't want your head chopped off. And I was able to write 75 words for one of her journaling books. And that, when I first started, that was a terrifying thing to actually have your name in print to 75 words only. But as you do it, and the second time I did that, and the third time, it gets easier and easier. And then I thought, Vicky, obviously behind it all, she said, what about writing a chapter? Why don't you do a chapter in an anthology? So I said, oh, I don't know about this. Ah, really nervous and all the rest of it again. But that, once you've done it and you get over yourself, it's so much easier to do it the second time. And it was the same with my first book. I was absolutely terrified. Vicky had to take me into the operating theatre and say, this, well, it was going to be a forceps delivery, and then it got to the OR and it was definitely going to be a C-section. It was, you know, how else was she going to get this book out of my hands and into hers? But the second one, it was so much easier in writing it. You don't have the same hang-ups. And in the first one, I was using quotes from other people at the beginning of my chapters. And I suddenly thought, I'm using my own quotes at the start of chapters in my second book. Not because I think I'm so amazingly wonderful, but just because I suddenly had the confidence to take something from the chapter and head it up with that phrase that was going to be coming later. It gives you the courage, just dipping your toe in gently and then gradually building up your confidence. It gets possible. Anything's possible when you do it that way.
Oh, absolutely. I had no idea that this show would be going into 8 years plus. So
exactly.
I didn't start out that way. I think we started out with like, okay, I'll do 10.
You thought that big. Wow.
Yeah. Well, I figured, you know, as you said, you kind of got to get, you know, get the training wheels on and then yep. slowly get your balance and raise the training wheels. Maybe you don't take them off yet. And then you keep going.
Yeah, and they can wobble as well. And you go back.
Yes, exactly. So, well, it's been wonderful. We're out of time now, but thank you so much for sharing your lifelong gained wisdom on legacy. And I hope everyone can take this way and understand how whatever your life is throwing at you, has thrown at you, and things that you've picked up along the way, other people are absolutely wanting to learn. And so please go out there and share any way that you can. Everyone, have a great week, whatever your adventures. Join me next week for another brand new episode. Enjoy.
The information provided on the Autoimmune Hour, Understanding Autoimmune and Life Interrupted Radio, including the websites understandingautoimmune.com and lifeinterruptedradio.com, plus social media, is for educational purposes only. What you read, hear, and see on the Autoimmune Hour, Understanding Autoimmune and Life Interrupted Radio, and its websites and other media outlets is based on experience only. The information should never be used for any legal, diagnostic, or treatment purposes.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.